This shiur is a review of the major issues that appear in the Rosh on Maseches Moed Katan relating to Avelos. I'm a little handicapped in this shiur because I don't have a Rosh in front of me, so I'm reading it from my notes. I'm going to try to present the main disputes, some of their main practical nafkaminas, the main conceptual underpinnings, the main rayos, meaning proofs, for each side, and the main responses of the other side to those proofs. So let's begin. The first important machlokas in the Rosh is arguably perhaps the most central or foundational dispute relating to Hilchos Avelos, and that is whether the laws of Avelos have a source in the Torah, or whether the laws of Avelos are simply derabbanan, simply rabbinic in origin. And there are a number of opinions about this debate. The Rif believes that the first day of Avelos is midoraisa, is biblical, whereas the remaining days of Avelos is midrabbanan. The Ravid believes that all of the dinim associated with the 30 days of Avelos, the 30-day period, meaning not taking a haircut, not shaving, etc., are deoraisa, whereas the remaining laws of Avelos, including those laws which are exclusive to the period of Shiva, are only midirabbanan. And the Ri, one of the Balei HaTosfos, is of the opinion that all of Avelos is only midirabbanan and is not midioraisa at all. One nafkamina of this machlokes is the question about Avelos on Yom Tov Sheni. If Avelos is only derabbanan, then we'll say that Yom Tov Sheni is a derabbanan which is binding upon the collective of the Jewish nation, whereas Avelos is a derabbanan which is only binding on the individual, and therefore Avelos should not push aside Yom Tov Sheni. Just the opposite. Yom Tov Sheni should push aside Avelos, and a person whose relative was Niftar, either on the Yontif, or on Chol HaMoed, or on Yom Tov Sheni itself, would not begin his Avelos until after Yom Tov Sheni. In contrast, if you believe, like the Rif, and like Rashi, who agrees with the Rif, that the first day of Avelos is Deoraisa, then at the very least, if a person passes away on Yom Tov Sheni itself, then we would say that the Deoraisa mitzvah of Avelos, even though it's only for an individual, pushes aside the Derabbanan obligation of Yom Tov Sheni Shalgalios. So that is one practical nafkamina between the two sides of this dispute. What are some of the main proofs? So there is a Gemara which discusses Avelos and calls it a mitzvah asay. It says, in describing the mechanism by means of which a yontif, like the first day of Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, the first day of Pesach, or Shavuos, push aside and interrupt the flow of Shiva or Shloshim, the Gemara describes that as an asay derabim, pushes aside an asay diyachid. Positive commandment which pertains to the tzibur, to the collective, pushes aside a positive commandment which pertains uniquely and specifically to the individual. This implies, says the Rif, that Avelos is a positive commandment biblically, because otherwise the Gemara would not have described it at all as a positive commandment. Rashi furthermore takes note of the fact that a number of the laws which pertain to the Shiva have their sources in Psukim. Well, the true, these Psukim are very often found in Nevi'im rather than in the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Nevertheless, Rashi says, we have a principle that very often the Nevi'im will contain mitzvot de'oraisa, which were preserved as an oral tradition until permission was given for the Nevi'im to write them down. So Rashi says that a number of the laws of Shiva, which were only recorded in Nevi'im, nevertheless have the status of those other laws recorded in Nevi'im, which we know were all oral traditions until the Nevi'im wrote them down. What are some of the pieces of evidence against Avelos being De'oraisa? So, first of all, we have a Gemara in Ksubos, which says that if a person became obligated to observe Avelos on the night of his chasana, meaning let's say that the father of the chasan or the mother of the kala, lo aleinu, passed away as they were about to go to the chuppah, and there's a potential for a tremendous monetary loss because you know, everything's already prepared and they would have to forfeit all of the investment in the chasana, Chazal created a special permission to leave the mace unburied until the chuppah takes place, and only after the chasan and kala enter their period of Shavu Brachos, which is like a yontif, only then should they bury the mace, and then the chasan and kala observe Shavu Brachos, and only after that do they observe Shiva. So the Ri and Rabbeinu Tam bring this as a proof that Avelos is only Dirabanan, because if Avelos were Dioraisa, would Chazal, would we have the audacity to treat it in such a way and to create a situation, lechatchila, wherein Avelos is pushed aside and delayed for 7 days? The only way that we would be able to do this is if Avelos itself is only Dirabanan. These are some of the main proofs. Again, the Machlokes is Avelos biblical or rabbinic. One nafgamina is a question of Avelos for a mace who died on Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios. And some of the proofs were the biblical psukim, which serve as the sources for Avelos, the fact that the Gemara describes Avelos as an asei diyachid, a positive commandment, and on the other hand, the fact that Avelos is pushed aside in order to facilitate the chasan and kala's Shavu Brachos and to make sure that the investment in the wedding is not forfeited. That's the machlokes number one. Machlokes number two in the Rosh. This appears in Simen Yud Tes. It's a very short machlokes. Whether an avel is permitted to bite his nails if they grow too long, where the Maharam says that an avel is not permitted to bite his nails, and the Rosh himself maintains against his Rabbi the Maharam that an avel is permitted to bite his nails. I don't have here in my notes the sources for this machlokes, but it relates to the question in the Gemara, which is a dispute about whether one is permitted or not permitted to bite his nails on Chol HaMoed, because many of the prohibitions of Avelos parallel those of Chol HaMoed. The Gemara concludes, I believe, that on Chol HaMoed, well, let's leave that aside. So there's a parallel machlokes about Avelos. Machlokes number three appears in the Rosh Simon Chaf Vav. The Gemara tells us there's a principle of Miktsas Hayom Kekulo, that part of the day is like the entire day. And this principle usually applies to the last day of Shiva and to the last day of Shloshim. So an Avel on the last day of Shiva, we practice this, will very often daven Shachris and have, you know, as soon as all of the people comforting him leave, he will cease to observe Shiva. He does not need to continue observing Shiva until nightfall on the seventh day of Shiva, but rather he may cease to observe Shiva as soon as the comforters have left him on that first morning. And the same thing with Shloshim. When people are observing Shloshim and not shaving and taking a haircut, once they wake up in the morning of the 30th day and have observed a few moments of the Shloshim, they are not obligated to observe Shloshim until nightfall of the 30th day, but rather they may take a haircut and shave right away. So the question is the following. We know that when Yontif falls out in the middle of Shiva, So the Shiva is terminated out of deference to the Simchas HaRegel, to the joy that we are supposed to and that we do experience on the holiday. And the question that arises is, how early is Shiva terminated? Do we say Miktsas Hayom Kekulo for this day, or do we not say Miktsas Hayom Kekulo for this day, which is the middle of Shiva, but which nevertheless is the last day of Shiva, because it falls out right before a holiday? So there seem to be two opinions about this issue. Everyone agrees that we split between different practices that are observed during Shiva, that we say regarding some of these practices that that you're allowed to do them on Erev Yom Tov, and with regard to other practices, you're not allowed to do them on Erev Yom Tov, you must wait. And my notes indicate over here that there are two distinctions that are drawn, that are cited by the Rosh. The first distinction is between those activities which are passable on Erev Yom Tov, which are passable on Yom Tov itself, meaning that a person is not going to lose out if he delays performance of those activities until after the holiday has begun, such as bathing and showering, which at earlier times, although not necessarily nowadays, was permitted on Shabbosos and on holidays. So at certain points in time, this was considered to be an activity which one would not have to lose out on if he did not perform on Erev Yom Tov. And therefore, there is a possibility that this activity was not permitted in the middle of Shiva, even when the middle of Shiva was practically going to be the last day of Shiva on account of the holiday interrupting it. But nevertheless, since it was possible to bathe on the holiday itself, Chazal did not extend to the Avel permission to bathe on the Erev Yom Tov. In contrast, when it comes to shaving or doing laundry, those activities are not permitted on Yom Tov. So therefore, passively Chazal permitted those activities on Erev Yom Tov. So that's one distinction between activities which are still going to be passable on Yom Tov versus those which will be impassable on Yom Tov. The second distinction which is drawn is between those laws which apply uniquely to Shiva, to the first 7 days of mourning, as opposed to laws which apply to Shloshim, to the entire 30 days of mourning, where the distinction would run as follows, that those laws which pertain exclusively to the 7 days of mourning, to the Shiva, namely the prohibition against showering and washing and the prohibition against doing laundry, those would be suspended in the face of Yom Tov, partially because those prohibitions are they're stronger prohibitions on the one hand because they're related to the laws of mourning, but on the other hand they pose a much greater contrast and dissonance with the Simchas HaYom Tov. In contrast, shaving, the prohibition of shaving, is not uniquely associated with the first 7 days of mourning, but rather it's associated with the entire period of Shloshim, the 30 days following the burial. And that, therefore, is, I guess, a lighter level of pain, a lighter level of mourning. It's not viewed as being so much in contrast and in conflict with the spirit of Yom Tov, and therefore, it perhaps would not be doche, would not be nidche on Erev Yom Tov. Again, that's what my notes indicate. Moving onwards. Simon Chafches discusses a machlokas between the Rif and the Rosh about a second tear for one's parents. The halacha is that a person is supposed to tear all of the garments that he wears during Shiva, the Gemara says, when he's sitting Shiva for parents. So the question is, we know that the first tear that a person makes for any for a parent is not ever supposed to be sewed up properly. The question is, what about the second tear? What about the third tear? Do all of the tears that a person makes in his garments during Shiva for his parents have the same law that they may not be sewed up, or do they have different laws? The Rif says that they all have the same laws, that it's just considered each additional tear is considered like just an expansion or an extension of the original tear. Just like the original tear may not be sewn up, so too these later tears may also not be sewn up. The Rosh, however, says that the remaining tears may be sewn up, only the first tear has a status of being the one which was made b'shas, you know, chimum, at the that was made at the critical cusp time when the emotions are strongest. The later tears are not viewed as extensions of the first tear, they're viewed as new tears which were made in response to a lower level of emotional arousal, and therefore they may be sewn up, even though the first tear may not be sewn up. Some of the evidence that impacts on this machlokes is the fact is it's an older machlokes. It's a machlokes in the Gemara, perhaps in the Yerushalmi, and there is a majority which maintains one way and a minority that maintains the other. So the shita that follows the majority says, hey, we're the majority opinion. The majority are stringent, like the Rif, and say that it may not be sewn up. So the Rif says, hey, I'm the majority opinion. But the Rush invokes a different rule and says that since this law of tearing is only a rabbinic law, halacha kedivrei hamikel, when it comes to derabbanan, we have a safik derabbanan, we go lekula. So says the Rush, in spite of the fact that there's a majority which maintains stringently and a minority which adopts a lenient opinion, nevertheless, we're still uncertain about the law, and whenever we're dealing with situations of uncertainty, when the laws are rabbinic in nature, so we are lenient. Therefore, the Rush rules, ultimately, that we should be lenient. The next machlokes is primarily a machlokes which relates to textual interpretation, but it does have a practical nafgamina. I'll speak out the practical nafgamina first, and then we'll proceed to examine the textual roots. The nafgamina is the following. The Gemara tells us that an avel during the first week of mourning is not supposed to leave his house. During the second week of mourning, so the avel is permitted to go to shul. However, he's not allowed to sit in his own seat, nor is he allowed to engage other people in ordinary conversation. During the third week of mourning, says the Gemara, the avel is permitted to either sit in his own seat or to engage people in ordinary conversation. The question is the following. We know that the Mo'adim, namely Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shavuos, count as 7 days. That is a halacha, they count as 7 days. So if a person, let's say, has observed 8 days of mourning, he's in his second week, and he bumps into Rosh Hashanah, or Yom Kippur, or Shavuos, then instead of being on day 9 the following day, he's considered to be on day 15 the following day. And the nafgamina for that primarily is for when Shloshim finishes, because a person has to observe, if he, let's say, has Avelos in the middle of Cheshvan, he has to observe 30 days of Shloshim, 30 days of abstention from shaving, haircuts, etc. However, if he's mourning in the middle of Sivan, so then potentially he would only have to observe 23 or 24 days of Shloshim, because, or maybe even less, because Shavuos counts as 7 days, and therefore it subtracts 7 days from his observance of Shloshim. The question is, do Rosh Hashanah, so that's the primary nafgamina. The primary nafgamina of the fact that that Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are counted as 7 days is that they shorten the period of Shloshim. The question is, do they also count as 7 days with regard to the halacha mentioned earlier about when the avel is permitted to resume sitting in his seat and engaging in ordinary conversation in shul? Do we say that a person who is sitting shiva, let's say, in the beginning of Sivan, and then he hits Shavuos, he automatically skips a week, and therefore he need not, the week after Shavuos, go to shul and both change his seat and refrain from conversation, but rather, if the week following Shavuos, perhaps, since Shavuos counts as 7 days, perhaps he's permitted to go to shul and either resume his seat or resume ordinary conversation. And the same holds true for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Does the fact that they count as 7 days extend to this halacha as well? So what are the textual bases for this dispute or for this uncertainty, the Gemara tells us the following statement. It says that if a person observed Shiva for one day before Rosh Hashanah, so then that, meaning for a few moments on Erev Rosh Hashanah, that first day counts as seven because Shiva is terminated by the arrival of Rosh Hashanah. Then Rosh Hashanah comes along, and the day of Rosh Hashanah itself counts as a further 7 days. So it's as if he observed 14 days out of the Shloshim. Then he continues from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur, so that's the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth days of Tishrei. So from 14, that takes you to 21. Yom Kippur will count for him as 7 days. That brings him to 28. however, and then he technically should observe the following 2 days as part of Shloshim. That's what one would have thought, approaching the sugya from one angle. However, there's a question about why this statement is relevant. Meaning, the statement seems to tell you that a person who started Shiva on Erev Rosh Hashanah is obligated to observe Shloshim until 2 days following Yom Kippur. However, this is astonishing, because the Gemara tells us that if a person has observed any part of Shiva up until the beginning of Yontif, Yontif terminates the Shiva. And if a person has finished Shiva and observed some of the Shloshim halachos, and then a Yontif arrives, the Yontif terminates the Shloshim. Ordinarily, the person would not have to resume observing Shloshim after the conclusion of the Yontif. For example, if a person observed Shiva 7 days before Pesach, and the eighth day of his mourning falls out on Erev Pesach, then as long as he observed some of the halachos pertaining to Shloshim on that Erev Pesach, once Pesach finishes, even though technically it's only day 15 or day 16 of his Shloshim, he's no longer bound to observe the laws of Shloshim. Pesach effectively wiped out his requirement to observe Shloshim in the same way that had it fallen out during the days of Shiva, it would have eliminated his requirement to observe the remaining days of Shiva. So the question becomes the following. If a person started mourning on Erev Rosh Hashanah, so he observed part of Shiva before Rosh Hashanah, then Rosh Hashanah therefore cancels out the Shiva. Then he observed another 7 days of Shloshim following Rosh Hashanah, and he arrives at Yom Kippur. So Yom Kippur should cancel out the Shloshim. Just as if a person began Shloshim before Pesach, and Pesach arrived, Pesach would cancel out the Shloshim. So a person who began observing Shloshim before Yom Kippur, and now Yom Kippur arrives, so Yom Kippur should cancel out the Shloshim. How can the Gemara imply that the person is obligated to observe Shloshim for 2 days following Yom Kippur? Again, the line of reasoning of the Gemara is that you have Erev Rosh Hashanah counts as seven, Rosh Hashanah counts as seven, between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is 7 days, and then Yom Kippur counts as seven, and you've got 28, and he's got to observe another two. How can the Gemara imply that he must observe another 2 days? Yom Kippur should cancel the Shloshim. So the Ravid speaks up and says that this is already combining too many of what we'll call halachic realities, where the reality is that he hasn't observed 30 days, and that a regel will interrupt the Shiva or interrupt the Shloshim. But to do it twice, that's already too much. So Chazal didn't want to use this mechanism of having a Yontif interrupt the mourning more than once. So you can either use it for Shiva, or you can use it for Shloshim. You cannot use it for both. Since in the case described by the Gemara, Rosh Hashanah itself already interrupted the Shiva, says the Ravid, we will not allow Yom Kippur to interrupt the Shloshim. That's the Ravid's assertion. The Baal Hamar, though, is astonished by the Ravid. The Baal Hamar says, how can it be that a person who buried his relative before Rosh Hashanah on the 29th day of Elul must observe his Shloshim until 2 days after Yom Kippur, whereas, in contrast, a person who buried his relative on Rosh Hashanah or on Tzom Gedalia on the third day of Tishrei, would not have to observe his Shloshim that long. Think about it. If a person buries his relative on Tzom Gedalia, the third day of Tishrei, so he observes Shiva for days 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 of Tishrei, and day 9 of Tishrei is the end of his Shiva and the beginning of his Shloshim, so he observes a few hours of Shloshim, and then Yom Kippur comes, and everyone agrees that it terminates the Shloshim, because he didn't need Rosh Hashanah to terminate the Shiva. So everyone would agree that in that circumstance, Yom Kippur would terminate the Shloshim. Says the Baal Amar, how can it be that a person who buried his relative on the day before Rosh Hashanah has to observe Shloshim for longer than a person who buried his relative on the day after Rosh Hashanah? And the Ravid won't be so bothered by this. The Ravid can just respond and say, I'll tell you why. Because a person who observed all 7 days of Shiva is entitled maybe to observe a shorter Shloshim. But a person who observed only a few hours of Shiva perhaps needs to observe a slightly longer Shloshim in order to compensate for their truncated Shiva. And the Baal Amar may respond and say, what are you talking about? How can a person compensate for a truncated Shiva by a longer Shloshim? Shiva and Shloshim have totally different purposes. So that's interesting, possible dialogue and back and forth between the Ravid and the Baal Amar. But practically speaking, the Ravid maintains that when a person buries their relative on Erev Rosh Hashanah, they must continue observing Shloshim until 2 days following Yom Kippur. The Ramban, however, disagrees. The Ramban says that we shouldn't pay so much attention to the precise details in this Gemara, which discusses that Rosh Hashanah counts as 7 days and Yom Kippur counts as 7 days. The intention of the Gemara was not to arrive at the conclusion that a person must observe Shloshim until 2 days following Yom Kippur. Rather, the intention of the Gemara was simply to point out in one long statement that either Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur or Shavuos or any of the other regalim count as 7 days. But it wasn't particularly to tell us that in this case a person must observe his Shloshim that long. And therefore the Ramban and the Baal Hamar seem to maintain that just as Rosh Hashanah would cancel out and interrupt and eliminate the remainder of the Shiva, Yom Kippur would eliminate the remainder of the Shloshim. And the person would not have to observe Shloshim for those 2 days following Yom Kippur. That's the opinion of the Ramban. Rabbeinu Shimshon Mishantz, one of the major Baalei HaTosfos, has a third opinion. And Rabbeinu Shimshon tells us that the significance of the Gemara is telling us that Rosh Hashanah is like 7 days and Yom Kippur is like 7 days is to teach us that after Rosh Hashanah, if a person immediately is catapulted into the third week of mourning. So that means that Erev Rosh Hashanah, where he observes Shiva for a few hours, is like the first week of mourning. So on Erev Rosh Hashanah, he can't leave his house. Then Rosh Hashanah itself counts as the second week of mourning, even though it's only 2 days. And had it not been a regel, then we would have said that he could go to shul, but he has to switch his seat and not engage in ordinary conversation. And then the day after Rosh Hashanah is already as if he's in the third week, when he's permitted to either sit in his seat or engage in ordinary conversation. And that is the nafkamina of the Gemara telling us that Rosh Hashanah counts as 7 days. It's not telling us anything at all, says Rabbeinu Shimshon, about when do you have to finish observing Shloshim. It's rather telling us that immediately following Rosh Hashanah, a person is considered to be in his third week and he's permitted to either sit in his seat or engage in ordinary conversation. Then it comes along and tells us the rest about Yom Kippur, but the Nafkamina, it's not taking a stand, says Rabbeinu Shimshon, on this machlokas between the Ravid and the Ramban about whether Yom Kippur terminates Shloshim even after Rosh Hashanah was used to terminate Rosh Hashanah. Rather, the Gemara was telling us something very particular, that either Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur will advance the mourner's stage of mourning by 1 week and therefore expand their permission to engage in ordinary activities in shul. It's not telling us anything, says Rabbeinu Shimshon, about when they have to finish their Shloshim. Again, the Ravid and the Ramban conceivably might disagree with this and tell us that the main nafkamina of the fact that regalim count as 7 days is primarily perhaps for the purposes of when they have to finish shloshim, and maybe has no impact at all on when the mourner can resume their ordinary activities in shul. So that's an important machlokas, which also appears in Simin Chaf Ches in the Rosh. Simin Lamed has a discussion about Miktas Halayla Kikula. We know that Miktas Hayom is considered Kikulo, part of the day is considered like the entire day. What that means is that, as we said earlier, if a mourner observes a few hours of Shiva, so then Yontif will terminate their Shiva. If a person observes a few hours of Shiva on the seventh day, this is the main nafkamina, so they don't have to observe the seventh day until sunset. If they observe a few hours of Shloshim on the 30th day, they do not need to observe Shloshim until sunset. So the question is, does this mean a few hours in the morning, or can it mean that if they observe Shiva for a few hours on the night preceding the seventh day, they already can terminate their Shiva? If they observe a few hours on the night preceding the 30th day, they perhaps can already terminate their Shloshim. And this actually has two separate questions. Number one, what about the end of Shiva and the end of Shloshim? And number two, what about if they hear a Shmua Rechoka? Person is very far away, and they only hear news that a person passed away 30 days after the burial took place. So the halacha in those circumstances is that a person is obligated to observe one day of Shiva on the day that they hear about the passing and the burial of their relative. So again, the question becomes, when we say that one day, everyone agrees it doesn't mean a full day, it means a part of a day, a couple of hours. But what about a couple of hours at night? If they heard that their relative passed away at the beginning of night, such as, let's say, in the winter nights, they're still awake, and, you know, night begins very early, 5, 6 o'clock, they hear about it, are they obligated to observe Shiva at least until a few moments of the next morning have passed? Or is it sufficient for them to observe Shiva at night for an hour or two, or a moment or two, and then they're immediately perhaps permitted to arise from the Shiva and resume their ordinary activities? So, what are the opinions about these two machlokos, which both seem to depend on the same issue? So let's see what the opinions are. The Rashbam, first of all, tells us that the minhag, the accepted custom and practice of his communities, was to observe part of Shiva during the day, and not to suffice, at least on the seventh day of Shiva, or on the 30th day of Shloshim, not to suffice with a few hours of the nighttime. That was a practice of his community. The Rashbam or others bring proof to this from the fact that the Gemara compares the 7 days of Shiva to the 7 days, the Shiva Nikiyim, that are observed by a Zava Gedola, by a woman who has seen blood on 3 consecutive days at a certain point in her cycle, where the Torah requires that she count 7 days without seeing any blood whatsoever. The Gemara tells us that on the 7th day, we're able to say Miktas Hayom Kikulo, that part of the day is considered like the entire day. There's a discussion about the exact parameters of the application of this law to a Zava Gedola, but the concept certainly appears in connection with a Zava Gedola, that once she's observed part of the seventh day, she may immerse in the mikvah, and then she becomes tahora, she becomes ritually pure, although she still has a possibility of reverting to her original status if she sees blood subsequently. So the question becomes the following, or the Rashbam says the proof is the following, that we know from other sources that Zava Gedola is not permitted to immerse at night. We don't say that counting part of the night as being clean from blood is equivalent to counting part of the day. She must observe the entire night which precedes the seventh day as being free from sighting of blood and a few moments of the morning. The Gemara seems to compare Shiva to this case of Shomeres Yom Keneged Yom, which would indicate to us that on Shiva also, nighttime is insufficient. You would need a few moments of the day to apply the rule of Miktas Hayom Kekulo. However, and this would apparently, it would seem, to impact both Shiva observed on the 7th or the 30th day of mourning, as well as Shiva observed on the day when a person hears a Shmur Rechoka, when he hears the fact that a close relative passed away and was buried more than 30 days earlier. However, the Maharam says that this idea that part of the nighttime does not count for part of the daytime, that you need part of the day as well, is a law in sphira. It's a law in counting. When you're counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, so then what you're counting, call it, is the sunrises. It's not exactly what the Maharam says, but that's a reasonable paraphrase of what the Maharam's position is, that you're counting sunrises. So you've got to count 7 sunrises, or 7 periods from, or call it otherwise perhaps, 7 periods which culminate in a sunset, or 7 periods which include a sunrise and a sunset. One way or another, says the Maharam, when you're counting, so to count, you need to wait until the morning, till the daytime, and then you can count that day. You can't count that day at night already. Obviously, Sefiras HaOmer is a little bit of a different story, but with regard to Miktas Yom Kekulo, maybe different than when you're allowed to actually start the count, one way or another. So the Maharam asserts that it's only Shiva which is comparable to this Zava Gedola case, because by the Zava Gedola and by Shiva, you're counting 7 days. So therefore, you can compare the two cases and say that just as a Zava Gedola needs to wait until a few moments of the morning have passed in cleanliness, so too, by Shiva, the Avel, the mourner, must wait until a few moments of the morning have passed in his mourning state. In contrast, the Shmur Rechoka, says the Maharam, when a person is only going to observe one day or a few hours, there's no counting there. There's no inyan of counting down or counting up or counting anything. The idea is that a person is supposed to observe Avelos for a few moments in response to the bad news that they heard, but he doesn't have to count anything. Says the Maharam, since there is no counting going on here, therefore, it is incomparable, it is not comparable to Zava Gedola, and therefore we would apply the rule of Miktas Yom Kekulo even to the night time. The Rivam adds on a further support for this argument, and the Rivam says that it's not Muchach HaMilsa. If a person observes his Avelos at night for a few hours, so it's not really clear that he's observing Avelos at all. And perhaps he needs to wait until the daytime in order to make it clear that his activities or inactivities are being done as part of a mourning procedure, no pun intended, mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, rather than as something which is just an eccentricity or part of his regular bedtime procedure. So that's why the Rivam would say that a person must wait for mourning, perhaps even with regard to Shmua Rechoka. Okay, maybe we'll stop for here. We'll continue some other time.